y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your persistent resistance of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
Sauce in my bag.
Swag.
Ooh, yeah, baby.
You would think after 9 or 10 or 11 months of everybody figuring out how to get information, that everybody would successfully get information. That just seems like a thing. It's like maybe it would have been a self-fulfilling prophecy. And yet, here we are on Monday afternoon, 14 hours after the Grammys have concluded. We can comfortably say that the will of the Recording Academy, as expressed through the pomp and ceremony of the Grammys, are unfamiliar with what formation might look like or feel like.
They have their own formation, really.
Damn. Okay, well, Joe Coscarelli bringing that raw heat. I am joined by the New York Times pop music crew. I have Cheap Pop Music critic John Perellis.
Hey there.
Pop music reporter Joe Coscarelli.
Hello.
Pop music editor and 21 Pilots editor Karen Gans.
Hi, John.
It's on your business card. You have to just own it. It's
it
on
is.
The card. So here we are. Adele swept her five nominations. She won five awards. She won Album of the Year. She won Song of the Year. She won Record of the Year, beating Beyonce and some other people. Like, let's not forget, there were other people in these categories.
But, Sturgill Simpson.
Yes. The boy Sturgill was in there. But Adele won. And Joe, before the ceremony, you and Ben Cesario wrote a piece basically speculating about how this could end up being the narrative of Grammy night. Talk a little bit about how that became almost a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, you know, to be honest, I didn't think it was going to happen.
Come on.
It's naive, but I thought the Beyonce was spread out over a lot of categories. She had a Best Rock Performance nomination, as we've discussed. She, you know, had a pop nomination. She had the big three, obviously. I thought they'd the Grammys.
Because she made an album that had more than one kind of noise, unlike Adele?
Sure.
Remember, we do like the Adele album.
We medium like the Adele. Can we just briefly detour to say that, like, reasonable people can like the Adele album, but if you're judging by my mentions on Twitter, the people who like the Adele album are not reasonable. Mm. So that's one thing.
Small sample size, but we'll run with it.
I mean, facts don't matter.
So, you know, I thought that the Grammys, they had two queens, you know, it was a historic face-off between two, you know, mega-selling, culture-shaking women of pop. And I thought maybe they'd spread it out. You know, Adele
Which
gets
one of
it
those
for
is
Hello.
Adele?
Adele could win record and song for Hello. Maybe Beyonce gets album for a more sort of cohesive, thoughtful, experimental body of work. But this being the Grammys, there was always the risk that Adele, as she did last time she put out an album, would sweep. Mm-hmm. And the risks that come along with that, for the Academy especially, are that there's already this sort of feeling in the air that they're out of touch.
Grammy so white.
That they're specifically out of touch with music by younger, blacker artists. Mm-hmm. You know, there hasn't been a Black Album of the Year winner since Herbie Hancock, almost a decade ago. There hasn't been a Black woman since Lauryn Hill.
And it's just, as again, as a sidebar, just in the interest of fairness, Lauryn Hill's Miseducation, Lauryn Hill did win Album of the Year.
Yes.
Outkast, Speaker Box, The Love Below did win Album of the Year.
Though Stankonia did not.
No, but that is, to be, you know, to be fair, is the more broadly accessible Outkast album. And the worst one, but, you know, still. But this is a problem that the Grammys is sort of uniquely ill-equipped to address.
Sure.
And there have been some rule changes in the last year or two that have been meant to, I would say, increase the proportionate power of a younger voting bloc and to decrease the proportionate power of an older voting bloc. But nevertheless, you look at everything that's happened in the last 3 or 4 years, you have Kanye West being consistently very vocal about being mishandled by the Grammys. You have the Macklemore-Kendrick Lamar moment, which is sort of the first meta self-aware race moment of the Grammys, certainly in recent memory.
You know, first and foremost, Kendrick is a friend of mine. He's somebody that I love his music. And in my opinion, had the best rap album of the year. And knowing how the Grammys usually go, I knew that there would be a great chance that we would win that award and in essence, rob Kendrick. So.
I wonder if Adele studied that before last night. I really do.
I thought Adele's reaction was very genuine in keeping with Adele.
I thought Macklemore's reaction was very genuine in keeping with Macklemore. That's like they're both true.
Yes and no.
Why not?
I think the Grammys are lucky that they had somebody as endearing and likable as Adele in the place of representing the white Grammy voter and the white audience, and that it was actually probably a really rough night for her. She had a couple of really not top-notch vocal performances, and then she's going to recall winning this award for Album of the Year as a fairly negative experience. She spent her entire speech kind of weeping and apologizing to Beyonce.
I'm very humbled and I'm very grateful and gracious, but my artist of my life is Beyonce, and this album for me, the Lemonade album, was just so monumental, Beyonce. It was so monumental and so well thought out and so beautiful and soul-bearing, and we all got to see another side to you that you don't always let us see, and we appreciate that. And all us artists here, we f***ing adore you. You are our light. And the way that you make me and my friends feel, the way you make my black friends feel, is empowering, and you make them stand up for themselves. And I love you. I always have, and I always will. Grammys, I appreciate it. The Academy.
You're right. She doesn't fill the role of villain, maybe,
exactly,
in the way that Macklemore did for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's impossible, really, if you pay any attention to Adele's public persona, to think of her as evil in some way.
Or even arrogant.
Right, not at all.
And she's not known for appropriating a style or anything like that.
Although it was interesting, because you saw some backlash on Twitter about, like, saying, I find your album empowering, my black friends find your album empowering. And there was this sort of small swell of negative energy around the idea about black friends, and that's just a trite cliche where someone just trumpet rolls out and like, hey, I have black friends. But like the thing with Adele is you actually imagine she does have black
friends. And I saw people pushing back a little bit within that conversation, mm-hmm, saying no, this album was for black women to feel empowered, and mm-hmm, that should be stated on this stage. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, Adele had other moments over the course of the night that sort of like confirmed her authenticity when she stopped the George Michael tribute because it wasn't going well, and she was like, I can't do this because it's not fair to George. It's not an authentic performance.
Probably should have stopped it about 2 minutes before it started.
No, you and
fair.
JP can debate this.
Yeah.
But she had a self-effacing night, and she was typically Adele. She was very likable.
And Beyonce had a very Beyonce night.
She did.
Except for the part about not winning, because Beyonce pretty much always wins.
Except at the Grammys.
Except
when
places,
she pretty much always loses.
Right. Except in places
at least
where
on TV.
Structural racism embeds itself into the voting process.
Also a place where a voting process is very, by the books, with the accountants. You know, there was a controversy last year. Remember when Kanye accused the VMAs of negotiating with Beyonce in order to get her to perform a certain way? I have a feeling that there
aren't. Widely understood to be true?
I think that is.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Just allegedly.
But not, but seemingly not so at the Grammys.
No,
yes.
I don't believe
Though the voting process is a bit opaque to your average viewer, it takes itself a little more seriously.
Right, yeah, like did Sway Lee vote? Like,
Great question.
I want to know.
Can you vote for yourself?
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I will, of course.
Sway Lee wrote Formation.
Yes, which
lost.
Yes, but I would like to know. Like, did Sway Lee vote? Yeah. I would like to know. Did Future vote? I would like to know. Did Bryson Tiller vote? Like, can someone get Joe?
Let us know, guys.
Pop music reporter. Can we get to the bottom of this?
Sure.
Okay,
I'll put out some calls.
All right, TK.
Rough year for voting.
Rough year for the popular versus popular versus the electoral. JP, what was your takeaway from last night? Were you flummoxed by the Adele win? Did you feel like it was?
I absolutely expected the Adele win, mm-hmm, because it's not just racism. It's that the Grammys are always so far behind. They're so conservative. They like what they think of as the well-made song, which is the kind of song you can sing at weddings and funerals.
Wow.
And, damn. You know, who came on to give, what, Song of the Year? Celine Dion? You know, that, a Grammy winner.
Sure.
You know, Natalie Cole, a Grammy winner. I mean, this is the kind of stuff they always reward. And Adele is perfect Grammy fare for the voters that always like the verse, chorus, verse song with the beautiful voice and the cleverly crafted real instruments. I mean, I think there are probably still people voting for the Grammys who think that drum machines program themselves, you know, who think that, you know, anything electronic is done by the computer and there's no creativity right. involved.
And also who think that Beyonce is not a songwriter.
Right.
Just as a sidebar.
But you know, I was looking at it, all of the album of the year had more than 30 people involved, producers, mixers, engineers, except
including,
for Sturgill.
Including Adele.
Including Adele.
Yeah.
I mean, she said we got it takes an army.
Yeah, some of the same producer. I mean, you looked on stage when she was accepting album of the year, and it's like, oh, that guy. Oh, that guy. Oh, the other guy. All the guys. All the white guys.
But the thing is, Adele is, the Grammys just like ballads. Period. Mm-hmm. And until the generation that is making Beyonce albums grows up and outnumbers all those people who mm-hmm. like slushy ballads, the Grammys are going to keep voting for them.
Or what if Beyonce does a standards record?
She wins.
I'm not advocating for that.
She
I'm
wins.
Just saying, I'm not advocating for that. But that's like the type of thing that I can see Beyonce at some point just being like, the hell with
it. Sure, I'll just do it.
Yeah, I'll just. Yeah,
why not?
I'll bang it out on a Tuesday. Yeah.
get the dream in the studio.
Yeah,
just work
like,
a little magic.
Yeah, we'll just super handle it. What else?
So, you know, you mentioned this sort of always being behind at the Grammys, but I do think we saw a little bit of a counter narrative for that
with
Chance the Rapper last mm-hmm. night. So Chance the Rapper won Best New Artist, which, to be honest, I didn't expect. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise.
I think, you know, we had predicted the Chainsmokers, which seemed, you know, they're everything they do is a hit. There were two rappers in that category, and two country stars.
Just again, sidebar again. Do you think choosing the Chainsmokers to receive an award given to David Bowie on the Grammy telecast is that a troll? Or is that just cluelessness?
Got to think it was an accident. I don't know how you could plan that.
I mean, I do.
Which award are you referring to?
Best rock song.
Best rock song, David Bowie,
cool.
Black
okay.
Star.
Yeah. I mean, David Bowie won a bunch of Grammys.
Yeah, and he was, you know.
Yes.
Which were his first music Grammys.
Again,
hello, Beyonce.
Right. The counterpoint is correct, which
totally.
Is... I had a very angry reader email this morning or this early afternoon when I woke up telling me about how the Beatles didn't win up until such and such a time. And they're like, Beyonce basically should wait her turn and it'll come to her if she's really good. And, you know, those are fun emails.
Yeah, if she waits as long as Steely Dan or Beck.
Yeah. Jeff Rotel or whatever.
Well, here's a nice little side note is that the Beatles actually beat Beyonce last night for best music film. Lemonade lost to Ron Howard's most recent Beatles film. Yes.
Burn it down.
That was before the show, luckily. Yeah,
literally burn it all down.
That was actually when I knew that things were not going to go well.
But JC, I'm curious what you thought about Chance's sort of anointing. You know, he had a lot of stage time last night. He won the first award of the night. He won rap album, which was televised later, and he had, you know, a significant performance.
Well, let's talk about Chance's relationship to institutions. Chance is a guy who, on the surface, is rejecting traditional institutions. He's rejecting record labels. He doesn't sell his music. He is effectively a SoundCloud artist, made really well. Chance is also an artist who is partnered with Apple Music.
And Kit Kat.
And, yo, first of all, Kit Kat, but to be fair, Kit Kats are delicious.
Sure.
They're, like, super delicious.
Yeah,
yeah, like, they're great. Even the white chocolate ones. I really like them.
I don't know that you're allowed to ask for Kit Kat to send you samples.
I'm not. No, I don't want to. I pay for my Kit Kat. I have no problem. It's like I pay for my T-shirts and my sneakers. I pay for my Kit Kat.
All right.
So Chance is doing a little bit of a bait and switch. And when you think about how people play with the Grammys and the Recording Academy, there's an entire thing that happens behind the scenes that most viewers have no idea about. There are Grammy brunches and panels and mini concerts. And especially when you are a younger artist, you are expected, if you would like to be nominated, you are expected to perform at these things, expected to show up, expected to shake hands at the Grammy Recording Academy chapter in Memphis or Atlanta or Detroit. I think probably someone like Kanye and Frank did that in the beginning of their career and then were like, nah.
Not for me.
Not anymore. The whole thing is trash. Chance, on the other hand, is a guy who took out an ad in Billboard that's, what did it say? Like
why not me? Yeah.
So if you want to talk about Grammy voters feeling discomfort around black artists telling them that they do not understand black music, and then you have Chance come in and basically wants to play the game. Why don't you vote for me? Why wouldn't you do that? That's a very different energy than Frank being like, I'm good.
And while Chance avoided a lot of the sort of traditional trappings, like you're saying, labels, he didn't get much radio play. He was very visible throughout this whole year, right? He performed on Ellen. He did SNL, what, three times last year? Mm-hmm. Twice solo, once with Kanye. He did, you know, a touching Muhammad Ali tribute at the ESPYs. He was, like you said, playing the game. He was like, look at me. I'm good. I represent goodness and talent and...
And God, he got rewarded.
There was actually a tweet going around last night, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who tweeted it, so if you tweeted this, just let me know. But basically saying that the only way you can really win a rap album Grammy is be white or rap about God. And, like, I didn't do a complete...
And not like The Life of Pablo.
No, right. But I didn't do a complete year-by-year check, but, like, on a sort of surface level, that kind of checks out. And Chance, it was very striking because Chance obviously has a tremendous amount of gospel running through his personal spirit and also through his music. But to render that so literal on the Grammy stage, to actually bring Kirk and Tamela Mann, to bring Cousin Nicole out, I thought it was incredibly powerful. Actually, let's listen to a little bit of All We Got by Chance the Rapper et al.
It seems like blessings keep falling in my lap.
Okay, so that was Chance the Rapper, All We Got. And we've just finished talking about how part of Chance's strategy, not supposed to be a strategy, but a strategy, is simply showing up, being engaged in the process, being willing to be a part of it.
Well, also, I want to bring up one other thing, which is that Joe is mentioning he made all these TV appearances.
Yeah.
And going with your old Grammy voter stereotype is they vote a lot for what they see on TV.
They're more likely to watch Ellen. They probably watch Ellen more than they listen to whoever's nominated in the hip hop and R&B categories.
Exactly. So I mean, it's a savvy process to put yourself on TV that's watched. You know, that's not BET.
It's true. I haven't done the lineup, but if you look at all the major winners this year, I think probably 90% of them played SNL.
Has Lil Yachty played Ellen yet?
Soon.
Soon? Lil Peep? Has Lil Peep played Ellen yet?
Next year.
Next year. Just a memo to Lil Peep's manager. Get him on Ellen. And then you sweep next year. And I wonder, as a sidebar, you know, Karen, we ran that piece about the best rock performance category, which included a couple of televised performances. I actually could have envisioned a universe in which the Kanye, Chance, Kirk, SNL performance was nominated for best rap performance this year. That's how it was genuinely moving.
Sure.
It was. Yeah.
Now, the reason that happens in rock is because rock is debased and fragile and collapsing as a sort of genre. And that's not the case in hip hop. But if it were,
I'm trying not to take that personally.
No, it's got nothing to do with it. I thought you were bringing your guitar this week. So Chance, as we've been saying, shows up. And in the Grammys, showing up, not just for the show, but for everything that precedes the show, matters. Let's talk about people who aren't showing up. Let's talk a little bit about Frank. Let's talk about Kanye. Let's talk about Drake. Let's talk about Bieber. Even though Tori Kelly was there, Justin Bieber did not show up. That's number one.
I feel obliged to explain that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tori Kelly is a singer who is managed by Scooter Braun, who also manages Justin Bieber. And you might notice over the years that Tori Kelly makes a lot of appearances on big television shows, but you don't really see her that much outside of those big television shows. And you sort of have to wonder, So where was Justin Bieber?
Was he on Instagram? I don't think he was even on Instagram.
He might have grammed a little bit. Yeah, he was on Instagram Live saying that Starboy was his favorite song of the moment.
Cool. Cool opinion, I guess.
Fine. The Weeknd.
Yeah.
Dating his ex-girlfriend. I know, yeah. You know, this is just a little celeb gossip for you guys. But
I will say, I was really struck by how Kanye-free the entire night was.
Except for James Corden's intro to Neil Portnow.
Yes.
It's like,
making a joke.
Are we embarrassed enough? I mean, that was just scary.
What did he say?
He Corden did an intro that was a big buildup for Kanye to come out. And he said, oh, no, sorry, here's Neil Portnow of the Recording Academy.
Oh, that's a classic award show host gag.
Yeah, but it was really embarrassing, especially on this night.
Yeah, you don't want to bring attention to the fact that Kanye West, who's nominated for 8 awards, by the way, just didn't show.
Also, like, no one thanked Frank, which I thought was, like, a little strange. The only acknowledgement of Frank that happened throughout the 3.5 hours is Solange, and Solange tweeting, what up, Frank, or Frank, what up, with a link to his Tumblr post.
After Beyonce loses.
Right, after Beyonce loses. But apart from that,
who do you think should have done it?
Yeah.
I feel like Chance could have done it.
He's probably the one.
Yeah. Maybe Sturgill would have done it. You never know. He could have broken his Grammy in half and, like, saved it for Frank. You never know.
But so, John, talk a little bit about the various reasons that some of the biggest names in popular music were not at the Grammys.
I will, but I think it's worth mentioning something that I wrote about in my piece, which was I was very, very struck at looking at the front row of the Grammys at all these black and brown stars who were not being given awards.
Like Rihanna.
Drinking out of a flask.
Yeah.
Killer.
Rihanna had a good
on
night.
On FaceTime. Yeah.
Showing up late, drinking out of a flask, FaceTiming with her friends. Just a great night for Rihanna.
I mean,
Another one. Not
that different of a night than I probably had, like, ultimately. But I was just struck at looking at who was on the stage and who was sitting in on the front row watching who was on the stage. And this, again, it's something I wrote about where I was like, it's like we have... I don't know, metaphor much. It's like we have a country that's roughly evenly divided, but one group has all the power. And it was very hard not to walk away from last night's event feeling like something was very wrong with that. What was the question?
some of these big stars who didn't show up.
Yes.
What were their various
people reasons? who wouldn't even bother being in the front row? We have Kanye, we have Drake, we have Frank. You know, Drake, according to the Grammy producers, had already booked a European tour. Although I think if you're Drake and you think the Grammys are important,
you fly back.
Yeah, you can, like, get a plane from Copenhagen. Like, it's not that deep. That's what planes are for. Like, literally, that's what planes are for, to get you from Copenhagen to Los Angeles and then to take you back. So Drake, I guess, didn't think the Grammys were that important.
Even though he was nominated for Album of the Year.
Right. Maybe he didn't believe that Views had a chance against Adele or Beyonce, which
Fair.
Is actually a totally credible, you know, Drake's nothing if not self-aware, so that's possible. Kanye, according to Kris Jenner, was prepping for Yeezy Season 5 coming soon. Also, Kanye...
We don't even know how Kanye is right now.
Well, we're going to find out on Wednesday at Yeezy Season 5. But Kanye didn't come either because he's boycotting on behalf of Frank, or didn't come because he's working on his fashion line, or both. Frank was in the wind. I mean, who knows? Dropping a hot Tumblr post the day before and then deucing out. And I think if on the Grammys, I mean, look, every year there's going to be a couple people who don't show up. I mean, obviously, Taylor Swift wasn't there, but also Taylor Swift wasn't nominated.
She was off cycle. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, was she nominated for anything, even like a weird off cycle award?
No.
I don't think so.
But wouldn't you just come to make the scene? Doesn't she just want a party?
I think if I'm Frank Ocean or Taylor Swift or Kanye West, like, I am the scene more than the Grammys are the scene.
I would go, for the record. Grammys, invite me. I would
nominate
love to come.
Nominate Gans 2018.
Dying to go.
So I think if your event is not consequential or cool enough that people do want to come just to make the scene, that tells you. And this is, I spent a lot of time last night and in the wee hours of this morning, like thinking about membership and citizenship and belonging. And if you create an intolerant atmosphere that appears to be biased, you should not be surprised when people start to say, actually, I do not wish to be a citizen of this.
And
I do not wish to be a member of this.
Sometimes even when these people are rewarded, there's just something off about it. Like the fact that Hotline Bling won best rap song.
Bars.
It's just baffling. And you have to think, like, even if you're Drake, you're looking at this award and you're thinking, but this isn't the one I rapped on.
Right. Although, again, just to be fair, that is what rap sounds like right now.
Sure.
I'm not saying that there is rapping happening on that song. I'm just saying that in that amorphous, ever mutating thing that is rap music, that's kind of in the mix.
There were 20 songs on Views. Some of them had rapping.
Yeah. And that's not why he got the Grammy. He got the Grammy because the Grammy voters saw Hotline Bling in print, or their kids were memeing to it or something.
Exactly. Tommy, are you memeing again? Damn you. Go to your room. Don't meme it. Also, and I think very telling, am I mistaken? Hotline Bling also won Best Rap Sung Performance.
Yes, the first ever winner by the person who did the rapping and the singing, if you consider there to be rapping on that song. Some of the words rhyme.
Are you suggesting that it should be a Best Urban Contemporary Performance? Would that be a better option?
So we talk about the Best Urban Contemporary Awards?
Well, that's when you knew Beyonce wasn't going to win. And did we talk about this on last week's podcast? That if we knew that if they were going to televise, did we talk about that off
you
mic or on
mic?
That
it was
we talked
a strange
about that
category.
Amongst ourselves. Yeah, okay. When Ben Cesario was covering the pre-show, and when he looked at the list of the awards that were being given out at the pre-show and determined what was going to be given out on air, that was a moment where we all had a pause and said, uh-oh, right. Not looking good for Beyonce. So this was around like 9:45 p.m. on election night.
Right.
That sort of feeling.
Like,
when the needle started going wild.
Oh, it's not looking good for Beyonce. Yeah.
So Beyonce's one award on the televised show of the night was for Lemonade for Best Urban Contemporary Album in a very strange category with Rihanna and then
King. Gallant, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Gallant.
So this was Beyonce's one win of the night, and it couldn't help but seem like a little bit of a consolation prize.
Especially because Urban Contemporary is not a real category. I actually had a guy on Twitter say to me, they made that award up to give to Beyonce, which is kind of true.
And she had a big speech prepared, and she delivered it.
We all experience pain and loss, and often we become inaudible. My intention for the film and album was to create a body of work that would give a voice to our pain, our struggles, our darkness, and our history. To confront issues that make us uncomfortable. It's important to me to show images to my children that reflect their beauty so they can grow up in a world where they look in the mirror, first through their own families, as well as the news, the Super Bowl, the Olympics, the White House, and the Grammys, and see themselves and have no doubt that they're beautiful, intelligent, and capable. This is something I want for every child of every race, and I feel it's vital that we learn from the past and recognize our tendencies to repeat our mistakes. Thank you again for honoring Lemonade. Have a beautiful evening. Thank you for tonight. This is incredible.
JP, you think she had another one just in case Album of the Year came through?
Another gold card?
Well, if she won Album of the Year, she would have thanked everybody and that would have taken half an hour.
Right.
So.
And then we would have gotten the Swae Lee shout out at the end of the Grammys that we were all robbed of.
True. But you know, Joe, you brought up earlier that Lemonade is an album as a concept. I mean, if the Grammy voters had a collective brain, you know, they would have given Adele the song because it's a pretty ballad and you can sing it at weddings and funerals. And they would have given Beyonce the album because the album is a giant, coherent body of work, both visual and musical.
You cannot tell me that Grammy voters...
It's an artistic unit.
You can't tell me that Grammy voters don't have HBO. They must.
They didn't understand Lemonade when they saw it, though.
It was free during the airing of Lemonade. That's how powerful Beyonce is. So there's no excuse to have not seen it.
Should we talk about some of the performances?
Oh, my God.
There were a lot of those.
Yes, but I do feel like let's just... The last thing we should talk about as far as award winning, and I think this is why Karen Gans is here looking so stressed out.
Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
Karen, we can't have you on podcast without playing and talking about 21 Pilots. Is Karen's Corner.
21 Pilots Corner.
It's like Kiner's Corner.
I love Ralph Kiner.
Yeah, it's like Kiner's Corner.
Now I'm touched.
Yeah.
I'm going to come on the podcast more. I'll do this extremely briefly. 21 Pilots.
Good pun.
Yeah, thank you. 21 Pilots won a rock award, and then as Sturgill Simpson looked on in dismay and fear, they began removing their pants at their seats.
To be fair, Sturgill Simpson looks on in dismay to a lot of things. Like, you can't necessarily...
It's his resting face.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, you know, it's you can't only
it's
attribute
true.
It
but
to
I will say,
Pilots.
After, like, triumphantly tweeting about their victory, I was then like, oh my God, am I going to have to tweet now because this is so wildly embarrassing? What are they doing? They're taking off their clothes. But then they got on stage and they told a very endearing story about how they watched the Grammys together years ago in their underwear, and they were nobodies, and they had no shot at the industry, and they thought, if we ever make it to the Grammy stage to accept an award, we're going to do it just like this. And then they encouraged their fans to, you know, believe in their dreams and that they could do anything. But I think that really encapsulated 21 Pilots and why their fans are so attached to them.
If I find out that 21 Pilots has a Hanes deal, I'm going to be super tight.
Got to say, those didn't look like especially nice boxer briefs.
No, I don't think they planned it.
I didn't say a La Perla deal.
Wow. anyway, so, we had a 21 Pilots moment. We had a rock moment. We had a rock moment in performances, since we're going to start talking about performances.
Let us switch to performances.
Maybe we should talk about Metallica with Lady Gaga just for a moment.
Please.
Which I didn't hate.
I didn't hate it either.
I found it, at first I was just sort of, I didn't know what to make of it, and then I kind of liked it.
Well, the stage dive, you can't not like a stage dive at the Grammys.
It's true, and it wasn't pretty.
And the whole thing was way better than Gaga's Super Bowl show, I felt.
I would not go there.
Oh, that's a hot take.
Yeah, I like the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's a flames take.
Yeah, for different audiences.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about the Super Bowl on the podcast, did we?
No.
But I say I liked it because it was Lady Gaga took a moment to remind everybody why we liked her in the first place, which was why she made really great pop music in the early 2010s. And she kind of pretended that art pop and Joanne hadn't happened. But I thought that the Metallica-Gaga performance, as she put it.
Metallica?
Metallica-Gaga.
No, but Metallica.
Oh, was it Metallica? Like
you're giving
kill
it
me.
An edit?
I ruined it.
Metallica.
Metallica.
Better.
I'm sorry, Lady Gaga. I thought this hewed closer to her, like, you know, arena rock dreams that I was kind of hoping that she was going to explore at the Super Bowl, since she was in an arena. And she had tendencies towards, you know, playing, you know, a sort of cheesy 80s style rock music. Now, Metallica, that's not exactly what that was about. Her styling was a little off. She was dressed for Motley Crue and she was performing with Metallica. But vocally, she was really making it happen. John Prellis, I feel like you have to have something to say about this.
Not much more than you did. No, she was hitting it. I mean, she had to. James Hetfield's microphone wasn't working.
That's true.
I mean, it was Grammy ineptitude.
Was that like the real resistance protest last night?
Turned off James Hetfield's mic. Somebody stepped on a wire.
Okay, here's what I can point out for anyone who has actually read Metallica lyrics. The song they sang,
it's called Moth Into Flame.
Moth Into Flame is about fame and social networks destroying you. So it was actually pretty contemporary.
Isn't that what Katy Perry's song is about?
Don't look at me.
Wow.
Katy Perry's song is about getting too drunk to vote.
Okay. Katy Perry's song, it's called Chain to the Rhythm. Let's listen to Chain to the Rhythm, which is not a bad song.
Chain to the rhythm.
Caregids, how do you feel about Chain to the Rhythm?
John, I love Chain to the Rhythm.
I know it!
Did you go to the disco ball in McCarran Park to hear it premiere?
No, I was too busy preparing for the Grammys, and I really regret it. I would have done that. I think it's a great song, and I thought the performance was really strong, too.
Did you feel more woke after you heard it?
I didn't feel more woke, but you know what I appreciated the most is that Katy Perry wore sneakers for this performance. That's meaningful.
Are you sure they were sneakers? They weren't like Coach sneakers. Like they weren't like.
Oh yeah, they were definitely fancy sneakers.
But still, sneakers. They weren't
What was the sole made of?
They were flats, John.
But so Katy Perry's performance of this song, which is vaguely politically aware, was sort of eased us into the political moments of the night.
That's right.
And it started, with the lyrics, which are about beating apathy or something. And then she ends the performance in front of the Constitution, and she says, "No hate," which I think is a message we can
and she also
mostly
had the
get
persist.
Behind. And then she also has an armband that says persist.
Do you think Katy Perry has like a staff, like in the same way that Hillary Clinton had like all those young meme kids working in the Brooklyn office?
The ones that were memeing?
Yes, those kids, those damn kids who were memeing.
Constantly memeing.
First you're memeing Hotline Bling, then you're meeting Donald Trump. What kind of career arc is that? But do you think Katy Perry has like a staff woke memer?
I think Katy Perry is aware.
Do you?
I do.
Okay.
I think she's engaged and aware. And I don't think you've seen a lot of that in her music before. And I think this is an important step for her.
Now, that song is sort of like a memo to herself. It's like, I've been making these pop distractions, and now, we've got a world to confront. I think that song, for all we know, that song had a completely different set of lyrics when Max Martin put it together in his secret laboratory. And after the election, she started thinking, wait a minute, I've been distracting people instead of waking people.
It's possible. And good for Katy Perry. Like, I thought that was a nice thing for her to do. She didn't go too far because it might have seemed false from somebody with her career arc up to this point. But there was a moment when I thought, oh, this is all we're going to get in terms of politics at the Grammys. And then...
But looking ahead, we thought, wait, A Tribe Called Quest is performing soon.
Woo!
What was that like, John?
Let's listen to We the People by A Tribe Called Quest, and then we'll talk about the performance.
I know what's called top five, y'all. If I could be so bold, but then all of the bad folks, you must go.
Dark skin, high yellow, and gas to go.
All of my poor folks, you must go.
Still hustle every day, and ain't making no dough.
And all of the Mexicans, you must go.
Doesn't mean if you're Chinese or Filipino.
Muslims and gays,
you got to go.
Boy, we hate your ways.
Just go away.
All right, so that's We the People. You talk about Katy Perry's song being a song about political apathy. Tribe Called Quest's song, which is not nominated, Katy Perry's song not nominated, but Tribe Called Quest's song is actually about the opposite. It's about the sort of the difficulties of living in a political climate where a certain set of people, i.e. the opposition, are not apathetic at all, are actively trying to limit rights, are challenging civil rights, are serving as obstructionists. And the Tribe Called Quest song is a pushback to that and sort of a send-up of it at the same time. Now, Tribe Called Quest never performed on the Grammys before. There's a little bit of a wink because they open with a war tour. And a war tour, there's a line in a war tour, Fife. It's like, I never let a statue tell me how nice I am. God bless the dead. There's a little bit of a wink and a nudge at the beginning of the performance. And then everything changes. Tribe Called Quest is dressed in all black, except for Jarobi, who I think had a Gucci jacket on.
Wow.
But it's sort of vaguely militaristic. There's a dance troupe that reminded me a lot of the S1Ws. And out of nowhere, Busta Rhymes and Consequence come out, and Busta Rhymes starts talking about President Agent Orange.
Booming.
Loud.
Hey, yo, Consequence.
What up, boss?
I'm not feeling the political climate right now.
I feel you.
I just want to thank President Agent Orange for perpetuating all of the evil that you've been perpetuating throughout the United States.
War.
I want to thank President Agent Orange for your unsuccessful attempt at the Muslim ban. When we come together, we the people.
Let's go.
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 You think it's safe to say Busta didn't do that in rehearsal?
I think that's fair.
Is that pretty safe to say?
It's a fair guess.
Like, honestly, shouts to Busta Rhymes. That's, I mean, really, like, play. It's like literally getting promoted from the A League to the major leagues and hitting a home run on your first at bat. Like, that's how fire that was. So Busta Rhymes is there talking about President Agent Orange and Trump's failed Muslim ban. And then all of a sudden, there's a wall that's resting on the stage between him and Consequence, and A Tribe Called Quest comes kicking through the wall, Q-Tip holding the hand of a young woman in a hijab. So you know that the Grammys are finally showing up for this. And Q-Tip, by the end of the song, is fist raised, screaming, resist, 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 resist. They bring up...
Katy Perry's like, I thought it was persist.
No one told me. They bring 20 or 30 people on stage, people from a whole variety of nationalities and ethnic backgrounds, more women in hijabs. So Tribe ends up having this incredibly powerful moment about inclusion. And that's a powerful moment that really works on two levels. You spend a lot of time thinking about what's happening in our country in terms of who's allowed in and who's not and who makes the decisions about who is on either side of this border. And then you think about what's happening literally on that Grammy stage. And the Grammys is an event that allows Tribe Called Quest to make a statement like that, that allows Katy Perry to make a statement like that, that allows Jennifer Lopez to quote Toni Morrison about the need for dangerous art in fraught political times, and then awards Adele all the albums and, like, pretends Formation basically doesn't exist. So that tells you a lot about what you need to know about
Tribe Called Quest. They put in their, they put in their time. They got the sort of emeritus spot.
Yes, yes. And I think also got the politically acidic spot, because as much as that Tribe Called Quest album was beloved, it was not nominated for anything. It's not released in the eligibility window. So you have to assume on some level, the Grammys and the Recording Academy understand that if we're going to bring Tribe Called Quest onto the stage, they are probably going to do something like this. But I feel like using a Tribe Called Quest to make a statement, a subliminal, a subtweet, in essence, a political subtweet, and then while you are dealing with the other hand and ignoring Beyonce, seems a little disingenuous.
Beyonce's performance, on the other hand, not so political? What do you think? I'm willing to hear a counter-argument for that.
Apart from the sheer fact of Beyonce sort of surrounded by and embraced by dozens of black women on a stage that's deeply inhospitable to black female art, that's a form of politics.
Did you expect Beyonce to try and make a current eventsy statement, JP?
I did. But, I mean, what she did was she gave you the 9-minute version of Lemonade. I mean, it was the same poetry, but now attached to her own pregnancy.
10 times out of 9, I know you're lying. But 9 times out of 10, I know you're trying. So I'm trying to be fair. And you're trying to be there and to care, but you're caught up in your permanent emotions, and all the loving I've been giving goes unnoticed. It's just floating in the air. Looky there, are you aware? You're my lifeline and you're trying to kill me. If it wasn't me, would you still feel me? Like on my worst day, or am I not thirsty enough?
But I wonder if this is a little bit of a preview for what Coachella fans are going to get out of Beyonce, which is a sort of, as you said, a reimagining of Lemonade, but focused largely on the healing part of Lemonade and fertility. And
also, look, motherhood. For those of us who do not know, Beyonce is pregnant. She is pregnant with twins. And she also, I think, did a very good job of expanding the boundaries of what a performance can be that doesn't involve a lot of dance moves on Beyonce's part. She literally mostly walked back and forth along one line and delivered a decent portion of the performance reclined in a chair. So I think for those of us who are going to Coachella, I do think that's probably even a more sort of hypertrophied version of
that.
And
yet there was a lot going on that stage. And it was, Adele, on the other hand, spent her two performances standing very still against pretty dark backgrounds. And as far as we know, she's not pregnant with twins. So
Damn.
Shots at Adele.
I'm just facts.
Well, I mean, Beyonce's been Superwoman. You know, she dances harder than anybody in her troupe while she's singing. And those twins probably kind of slow her down. So, I mean, the big dance troupe is in part camouflage so she can just stand there or sit there and sing, which
is
very canny. Yeah, it was a performance about interiority, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was about, you know, this is what's going on with me now. I'm about to be a mother again. I'm thinking about all the generations of mothers before me. I don't think it was political, but it's probably what's on her mind.
And introduced by her mother, Tina Knowles, as well, mm-hmm. which was daughter. Nice.
Blue had a big night.
Yeah. Looking good.
Yeah, great.
With actually, a little Black Panther on the back of her jacket.
Also Gucci. So in the narrative of Beyonce versus Adele, Joe, you point out that Beyonce was doing more than Adele, even though Beyonce is carrying children. JP, let's talk about Adele's performances a little bit. There were two performances. She opens the show with Hello, and then there's a second performance later, which is a George Michael cover as the entirety of the George Michael tribute. Right. What was your read on those two performances?
Well, Hello was that's what you get on stage with Adele. She comes and sings her heart out, and it's very dramatic. That was she could do that in any stadium anywhere. I like the George Michael performance. You hated it. Let's tough it out. But I think especially in Europe, even more than here, people are really mourning George Michael. He was a much bigger star over there, and I think he was some kind of touchstone for a lot of people who make well-crafted pop songs mm-hmm. like Adele. And also
George Michael was a belter. Like George Michael was a genuine soul belter.
Yeah, well, he was also it doesn't get publicized, but he was also like Prince. He played everything.
Yeah.
He was a real pop craftsman, and in the old-fashioned Grammy award-winning sense. But I think he's being very much mourned there. And so Adele takes this song, Fast Love, which is sort of a pickup tune, and slows it down, puts it to a lugubrious string arrangement, and blows the first take of it by going flat.
Chopped and screwed version.
I know it's live TV, I'm sorry, I need to start again, I fucked it up, I can't do it again like last year. I'm sorry for swearing and I'm sorry for starting again, can we please start it again? I'm sorry, I can't mess this up for him. I'm sorry, I can't. I'm sorry for swearing, I'm really sorry. Start again, I'm sorry, Ken.
I was playing it back. I mean, she nailed it the second time. Bette mm-hmm. Midler's tweet was right. Mm-hmm. She pulled off this performance and, you know, she ends it. She turns the song structure around a little bit and ends it saying, I miss my baby. Mm-hmm. It's about missing George Michael. I thought it was a nice tribute, even if it wasn't George Michael's style, George Michael's spirit and delivery. But it was a funeral song.
Right, but it's a that wasn't the in memoriam segment. Like it wasn't meant to be. He is dead. But George Michael. I mean, the thing about George Michael, on top of all the things we've talked about before,
he was mischievous,
vivacious
and sexy.
Yeah,
there was no sexiness.
This is true.
No, and this is. I mean, you want to talk about coming to bury George Michael? I mean, this is ultimately what I felt after Adele's performance. Is I was like, there was not a single aspect of what I personally enjoy about George Michael or find thrilling about George Michael, and I think what many people find thrilling about George Michael, there was none of that. And I got the sense, and partially because of Adele's sort of like live rewind, but also got the sense that maybe it was a last minute thing.
Somebody had to write that arrangement.
I mean, I don't, you know, get Max Martin in a room, bang that out in 20 minutes.
James Corden was very close with George Michael. I have to imagine that when he signed on to host, he might have tried to corral Adele to do this early. Mm-hmm. I think some people were hoping for that moment to be sort of like a gay rights moment, because that was an issue that was sort of very lacking at the awards last night.
Yeah.
So perhaps, you know, a gay man would have been a good fitting person to tribute mm-hmm. George.
Speaking of fitting or not or ill-fitting tributes. Let's talk a little bit about the Prince tribute. Prince tribute was in two parts. The Time came out and did The Time.
Did their thing.
Just did the exact same thing that The Time always does, which is not a shot. I've just seen them do it a lot. And then Bruno Mars came out for one song in purple sequins. JP, what was the vibe on the Prince tribute?
I thought The Time thing was kind of self-serving. Let's
they played time songs.
Well, they were songs actually written and mostly recorded by Prince. But yeah, yes. They were like, oh yeah, we're still around. We could book us for your bar mitzvah. Yeah. You know,
if anybody does book the time for their bar mitzvah, like, please invite me.
Yeah,
because
I
will come through and be lit.
I'm gonna go meme that right now. Hold on.
Baruch atah oyo oyo. Is that, are we good?
Okay. Next week.
All right. So then
Bruno Mars can get a second job imitating anybody. I mean, he can do a good Sting, and now we know he can do a good Prince.
Yeah. Although, and I said this on Twitter and in the piece that I wrote last night, which is the commercial that played immediately after the Prince tribute, which is a commercial for a phone that I guess Google has, which is like not a thing that I was up on, but it was basically a fake Apple ad that included covers of Nothing Compares to You, which was written by Prince, even though it was popularized by Sinead O'Connor.
Shout out to Sampha.
Sampha, the guy from Deer Tick, Jen Wassner.
Yeah, who cast this commercial?
Someone we know, probably. Yeah.
that's true. Or someone who reads us, yeah. Probably. But I thought that was like actually very, very affectionate and really showed Prince's strengths as a songwriter. You had singers from all different styles delivering their versions of that song. I thought that was powerful, and in a way more powerful than what Bruno
did. I thought Bruno was powerful too, though. I think that there was a concern that he might not bring a lot of sex appeal to it. I thought he did a good job at that.
The eyeliner, genuinely on fleek, like actual genuinely on fleek.
But also showing off the musicianship of playing the guitar solo. I don't think people imagine Bruno in that scenario.
And also the guitar caress.
Yes.
Like sort of emulating pure Prince and Prince at the Super Bowl and all that. That was, yes.
Can't not have that.
No, very, 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 very. I felt like the audience didn't quite know what to do with it. It was almost like they didn't know that they were supposed to be into that. I don't know. It was a strange moment, I thought, in the audience. Okay, so before we go, let's briefly lightning round on a few of the other performances. Karen, I know you have some words about Ed Sheeran. Let's hear them.
I liked Ed Sheeran. I thought when he played on Saturday Night Live last week, I thought he was good. I was a little disappointed that he played with the full band. He didn't do his trick where he uses his pedals and he creates all the sound by himself.
It's Tune Yards trick.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we've seen it before, but it's...
Andrew Bird?
Oh!
He's still around.
I know. He's doing great.
I thought it was appealing. It's a good song, and it was interesting to watch it sort of be built. You know, there weren't that many performances that were laying its musicianship bare. That's another reason why I liked the Bruno guitar solo so much. But you're watching Ed Sheeran sort of construct this song in real time for you and then perform it with a really good vocal performance. It made me think, okay, this Grammy moment is about the music.
Ed Sheeran, light reggae, trap house. Katy Perry, light reggae, trap house. You know, like, but no Skip Marley. Ed Sheeran just going in. No cover.
Doesn't even need a Marley.
That's what I'm saying, no cover. Just going in bold. Talk a little bit about Sturgill and Marin.
Well, both of them was Country Soul Connection. It was like, it was good sort of straightforward, old-fashioned American roots music. I thought Marin and Alicia Keys was kind of like Marin comes out and does a big build-up, lots of American Idol like emoting, and then Alicia comes out and shows her how to do it and make it seem perfectly natural.
Yeah,
and then they push it together.
We all, to the exclusion of JP, but we all went to go see Maren Morris at the Bowery Ballroom a couple weeks ago, and Joe and I were talking, and I remember what it was like. This is like a Kalani show.
Yeah,
the first half especially.
Yeah, she was wearing some fashiony athleisure, just doing her R&B singer thing.
Yeah, so that's what's up with Nashville.
Something to look forward to.
Yes, that's true. Can't wait. And Sturgill doing the more sober and serious version of country, not 2010s country soul, but 1960s country soul. I thought with the Dap Kings, and I thought like a relatively muted and understated performance, especially given his SNL performance a few weeks ago.
Rollicking.
Yes. This is like a very a different gesture. And unfortunately, a night where other people were doing some pretty rollicking stuff. But I was very struck in the first half of the show, especially.
By how slow it was?
Yeah.
It was a rough first hour.
How temperate.
Smooth.
It was. It was very like 1977, 78, 79, and whether that was like the literalness of Little Big Town covering the Bee Gees or The Weeknd and Daft Punk.
Covering the Bee Gees.
Yeah. Or Keith Urban and Carrie Underwood covering the Bee Gees. I was very struck because I guess I had not previously thought of this particular moment in pop music as being completely indebted to 1970.
Even to the Grammys to make it happen.
Yeah, it's almost as if there was like a brief, like a remit that went out. It was like, do your most late 70s number.
Don't even vote for John Beyoncé and pretend right, it's the 70s.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, we want to, on podcast, we want to acknowledge the passing of a couple people who died in the past. We want to acknowledge the passing of David Axelrod, the famed producer and composer from the 60s and 70s, and also Al Jarreau, who died, I believe, was the day of the Grammys, or yes, it was the day of the Grammys. Al Jarreau, multiple Grammy Award winner. And I hate to say this, but if there is ever a time that you want Pentatonix on the Grammys, you want Pentatonix on the Grammys the day that Al Jarreau dies.
But to do one of his songs.
You might be alone.
What?
To do one of his songs.
They could have, yes. They could have and should have. Just because I want to make everybody squirm a little bit, we are going to go out on the Grammy-winning Pentatonix version of Dolly Parton's Jolene.
Jolene, 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 Jolene. I'm begging of you, please don't. Beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain. I cannot compete with you, Jolene.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times podcast, and thank you for watching the Grammys, I guess, or at least listening to us talk about how we watch the Grammys. Thanks to my guests, John Perales, Joe Coscarelli, and Karen Gans. You can read what all of us had to say about music's biggest night at nytimes.com/music. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, and I've been getting your emails, just in case you think I haven't. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com to tell us, on a scale of 1 to super racist, how racist you thought the Grammys were. Subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, anywhere you get your audio content. You can subscribe to Louder, the NY Times music newsletter. Go to nytimes.com/newsletters and drop us an email. Our producer is Vanessa Romo. We will be back next week. I had to have this talk with you, my happiness.